have a couple of ways we can look at this list from today's perspective. One, that all ancient people from all time periods, from all corners of the earth, have been debunked by modern material science about these strange, almost alien descriptions. Or two, that we have been ignoring a branch of science that proves them exactly correct, but under very different terminology. We might just be playing word games to create false categories. For example, ancient people said that the Great Flood was caused by God, but modern science is finding out it was caused by a solar flare. And right in the middle, we have the Egyptian personification called Ra. Just by unifying those opposites comes clarity to a confusing subject, but first we gotta acknowledge the words of others as wise. We need to face this fact. Mythology is half-cocked without science, and likewise, science without mythology is even more unstable. So when it comes to the heavy-hitting subjects like birth and death, we better take heed as to what both sides of the fence have in common before we come to any conclusions whatsoever. The strange orbs of fluid light from the so-called other side perceived by the ancient mystics must have a scientific equivalence today. And thanks to bold, intuitive, and fearless minds like Robert Temple, Judy K. King, Robert Schock, and Rupert Sheldrake, we might have new terminology that bridges the gap. A new science of heaven. This is the strange and unseen world of plasma sentience. In the late 1800s, everyone wanted to talk to their dead grandpa, paving the way for hoaxers to grab for easy money. Charlatans would hide cheese paper in their butts or in their vaginas, and through sleight of hand, produce the ectoplasm of deceased loved ones at some kind of dark seance. Many of them got busted, and we laugh about it today. So that's the last nail in the coffin on this subject, and the end of our show. Goodbye, guys. Okay, now that it's just us here, let me illustrate a point that many of you might have already caught. Skeptics and material science often ignores the study of things that hoaxers have been caught perpetuating. They see the scam and they call it debunked because, well, everyone is super afraid of being seen as a secondhand fool. This would be like camping in an area that's got bears, seeing some bear tracks, and then finding out that your buddy Sean has quite a sense of humor and brought with him a little barefoot print cookie cutter thingy as a joke, and now that you know that he snuck out in the night and hoaxed those bear tracks, y'all leave food out knowing damn well that there are no bears. This is a huge mistake to overlook, because there might be. Look closer and you find bear shit in the woods, and Sean would probably not go that far. Probably. Yes, he would. Our last video, Science of Heaven, laid out the evidence of the Cordalesfi clouds that seemed to be aware of not only themselves, but of us. As they matched the highly structured crystalline form of much smaller, self-organizing dusty plasmas that have been studied in labs. Plasmas that resemble the multidimensional life form that we call neurons, a brain. For this episode, we should remember that the computational power of such a complex structure as these Corti clouds dwarfs that of a human brain or any AI here on Earth. These clouds have been here for billions of years, a likely estimate, and can store all information contained in our solar system, yet they seem obviously interested in the Earth and Moon system, which is their home. We should be clear, though, that despite the evidence of sentient consciousness, we do not know if these clouds have emotions or free will. They might, but so far we only have evidence of intelligence, kind of reminding us of the archons of Gnostic lore that can imitate and store information but are jealous of human activity, which is a gift from the divine. But we'll come back to that. We also learned that 99% of the universe is not atomic, but plasmatic, a scientific certainty that is somehow still not widely known. That brings us to a very fringe idea that hovers mostly in the realm of sci-fi, where we might start to ask ourselves where the idea for sci-fi even comes from in the first place. Because if 99% of the universe is plasma, that means that 99% of you is plasma as well. As above, so below, babe. Thus, we have been forced to acknowledge the possible real existence of what has been called ectoplasma. If ectoplasma is animate or sentient, and physical matter is not, as far as we can tell, is it safe to speculate that what animates life in a human body is the plasma that inhabits it while we are alive? And does it leave at death? We all remember the study in 1907 when Duncan McDougall, MD, performed a series of extraordinary experiments on dying patients. He showed his work on six cases where he was able to weigh the patients at the moment of their death, and they lost weight. Not much weight, but enough to get your girl to update her profile picture on Instacart. What many people don't know is that they had animals as well. Dr. H.B. James writes this: "Let me add that I have repeated them with animals, and there too Crookes' results are correct. There is always a sharp drop, but its extent is very much less than in man. Such are the facts. The interpretation, of course, admits of argument." So, per capita, less weight is lost in animals, you know, because we people got a big fat soul. But this would indicate that a larger consciousness adds to this weight. And all of a sudden, I'm reminded of stories of ancient Zen masters who would die and become light as a feather. I wonder if this, like many allegorical interpretations, is an exaggeration of this same process. Skeptics will say that this experiment is not evidence because it cannot be repeated. That is plain false. The fact is that no one has yet tried to repeat it. I mean, we got reputations to maintain here, guys. Perhaps it would behoove them to create an experiment to debunk it, if that's the proper motivation needed to find out. If you can prove it wrong, then do it. I mean, remember when outer space was just an empty void, like just the other day? And we now know that there's a great deal of activity that we just can't see. Well, funny story. Swiss astronomer Fritz Zwicky told us this back in 1933, and his colleagues blacklisted him, to say the least. They went as far as to write letters to every single publisher out at the time, warning them not to print his work. We now know that this was to maintain the established theory that kept them in business. However, when the findings began pouring in, as they typically do with time, instead of apologizing to Zwicky, his colleagues insisted that they knew he was right all along. Don't ever think that science or any other field is above social drama. It also turns out that the censorship of Zwicky's findings were completely illegal, but no one was held accountable. I don't know, but yeah, let's reel it in. The U.S. defense establishment hired Winston Bostick to find out how plasma would react when fired into magnetic fields. The interactions of plasmoids and magnetism could yield great weapons, after all. But unknown to Bostick at the time, he would make a gigantic scientific discovery that nobody expected. Results that the military would have to hide, and they remained hidden for a long time. But you can't hide from professional snoops like Robert Temple, because he went through what he called impossible lengths to find these papers. Papers of which surprised Temple, even though they backed up his own hypothesis. Because it turns out, if you try to weaponize plasma, plasma just does not want to cooperate. For the job, Bostick invented what he called a button source, but it's basically a plasma gun. As the plasma ejected from the rod, it would take on this unexpected torus shape. So right off the bat, it was weird. At the time, it was not conceivable that non-atomic particles could organize like this, but it was known that the torus shape was closely related to all living things. See our cosmic egg video for all that jazz. But for right now, imagine shooting gravel out of a cannon and then watching it self-organize into donuts. That's how surprised they were. But the real show happened when the plasma left the button source to act on its own. The discovery that bursts of plasma were not merely shapeless blobs, but were tori, was bizarre enough. But things got much, much stranger than that. In his article, Bostick described these features. Interesting and unexpected effects are produced when two plasmoids are projected at one another across a magnetic field. For example, an interaction that looks like an elastic collision of two billiard balls. These effects become even more spectacular when four sources instead of two are employed, Robert adds to this. They seemed to be behaving as living entities. We appear to be dealing with bodies which have strong powers of self-organization and preservation. Plasmoids seem to seek each other out unerringly. Not only do we have hunting plasmoids, we even have mating ones. After the union of two plasmoids has been accomplished, the angular momentum will wind them up into a spiral. The resulting plasma and magnetic configuration then seems to be stable. It is astonishing that such bizarre configuration of plasma and magnetic fields should appear to be stable. No theoretician known to the author has a prior dream of such a configuration. Bostick became so excited by this that he also reverted to an earlier concern with galaxy formation and wrote, "It is possible to apply the knowledge gained concerning the nature of plasmoids to a hypothesized process of galaxy formation. The behavior of charged plasma and plasmoids may be similar at all scales of size, from these tiny plasmoids in his laboratory to the scale of entire galaxies in space." The plasmoids did their own thing, and the scientists felt, frankly, laughed at. This infuriated the military, of course, hence the non-disclosure, but they reacted the same way that you would react if you intended to play a game of pool, but when you struck the first ball, it got up and woke the other balls on the table, and they left the weird green carpet thing that I can't think of the name of and danced around the room. That game of pool for you would be over, and you might even think twice before telling your friends about it. Temple's book, A New Science of Heaven, describes many other experiments like this. The plasmas cannot be contained, for example. Even with copper shields and thick, sturdy walls, the dancing plasmoids would pass right through them and just leave. In a rather comical experiment, plasmas were found to give birth to their own dust. And why is this comical? Well, these labs are clean rooms. Basically, if any dust or bacteria is found, you gotta scrap the whole experiment and start over. So each time they almost achieved some kind of result that could be recorded, they found dust. They didn't know or even conceive that plasma could do this, much less choose when to do it. Because time and time again, it would happen at the worst possible times, under all kinds of different controls, seemingly to aggravate the researchers, until finally they caught it giving birth to its own dust, which turns out in itself to be a breakthrough discovery, which is good for what we need as speculators. What is most bizarre is that the strange misbehavior of the plasmas is not consistent across labs. The mischief is specific to each experiment, seemingly in the goal of retarding the desired result of each particular study. Easy now, it's in the text. Free and out in the open, though, what we might call free-range plasma, has been found to feed on younger, fresh plasmoids and be literally nourished. They tend to swarm like microbial beings and even take on the form of intricate helical structures as if practicing to make DNA. So it seems that if you want to study something's behavior, it might be best to do so in its natural environment. Otherwise, it'll act weird or fight back. In the defense of the scientists, they didn't know that it was alive in the first place. What makes this downright frightening and somewhat exciting is that if these things are alive, as the data shows, then they have, and I hesitate to say, superpowers by every definition. Just like we have seen in myths describing djinn, sprites, daemons, or even the way that the paranormal world describes UFOs and alien beings. The way these plasmas act can be described the same way that we do for ghosts. The further suggestion is that when we die, because our physical body has worn out, our plasma body may detach from our physical body and abandon it to death. We might be said to continue to exist as plasmatic beings made of non-atomic matter. This leads to the concept of bioplasma beings existing without physical bodies, and I suggest that this is what is often referred to as the other world. Traditionally, it has been called the spiritual world. Upon the assumption that it must be wholly immaterial, it was assumed that the body and spirit were entirely separate, one being material and the other one being entirely non-material. This is the prime fallacy of our Western civilization. it is not a fallacy that was ever traditionally adopted by the Chinese. Zen guys knew. In mythologies and ancient spiritual sects, birth and death is associated with light. Well, again, we have an affirmative with science. We have captured footage of original conception in the womb and found that when the sperm and the egg become one, a flash of light is emitted. Scientists say it's a flash of zinc. Hippies say it's the spirit entering the body. And here we all are watching them fight over which one it is, knowing that, per usual on this channel, it's probably both. And don't start in the comments with that same old usual argument about that thing. Okay, let's not jump to fight and convince mode over a clip. I mean, it really gets us nowhere.
And the treatise on resurrection interprets 1 Corinthians 15, Paul's teaching on resurrection. But Paul did not see Jesus come out of the grave. Paul did not touch him. Paul never talks that way. Paul says, there I was, you know, traveling to Syria. And suddenly I saw this brilliant light in the sky and I fell down and I was blind by it. And I heard Jesus speaking to me. And who are you? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you're persecuting. You know the story. So he said, I saw this light. I heard this voice. Jesus spoke to me. And if you read Paul's views on resurrection, he talks about this physical body must be transformed into an invisible body. This material must be transformed into imperishable. We have to be transformed. And the resurrection is a transformation, not a resurrection of a physical body, which is what the church doctrine becomes, if you know.
There is a cold fluid that has been chiefly found in the brain that joins the physical body at conception and helps it operate. And I don't mean supplements it. I mean helps it operate. They just don't know how. But it coordinates and guides the development of growth. This same cold fluid is coined by Victor Inushin as bioplasma because, well, it's plasma, and it animates us. If you want to, you can call it our ghost. This discovery might not be so new, as Aristotle himself describes the same thing, but he called it pneuma. He took it further, though, and said that pneuma, or what we call bioplasma, leaves the body at death to rejoin with the ether in the heavens. Basically, space not being void is another thing he was spot on about long before our aforementioned friend Fritz Zwicky gotten so much heat over telling us that space was not empty. Aristotle said that this plasma body cannot die at all. It either transforms or goes up to merge with the celestial spheres. He was certainly heavily motivated by this theory of a fifth state of matter. So here we go again with another modern parallel. An English translation of a paper entitled, well, Bioplasma, the Fifth State of Matter, says this. A living organism can be described as a biological field. We have obtained evidence that a fifth state of matter, bioplasma, exists as a part of each organism's biofield. Bioplasma consists of ions, free electrons, and free protons. It is highly conductive and provides opportunities for the accumulation of transfer of energy within the organism as well as among different organisms. Bioplasma appears to be concentrated in the brain and the spinal cord. At times, it may extend considerable distances from the organism, raising the possibility of telepathic and psychokinetic phenomenon. Okay, so I need a moment here. I mean, this plasma stuff is pulling laboratory science right into the lane of Kundalini. Kundalini episode on the way. Stay tuned. Light is emitted as a sign of death as well. In 1916, physicist Leonard Froelland discovered biophotons. And if you text biophotons, SpellCorrect will jump on and say that it's wrong because the word isn't used anymore, because we don't study it anymore. Robert Temple, writes, changes in biophoton emission rates are the earliest possible sign of cancer. So early is their warning that millions of lives could be saved or significantly extended if a mass biophoton detection program were adopted. With such extremely early warnings, incipient tumors could be removed before they become dangerous when they were still only a few cells in size. Biophoton detection is not invasive and does not require expensive scanners. It does not bombard the body with radiation. It is an entirely passive process. It need cost very little. And that was the last nail in the coffin for biophoton research. But before its early death, this biophotonic light could be seen running along meridian lines on the body, kind of like the magnetic clusters rumored to exist along ley lines on Earth. And as above, so below. Dunk number two. Robert Temple compares this to chi energy, spelled QI, as spoken about in Eastern mysticism and practiced by yogis then and today. With all this said, it seems as though yoga and tai chi are indeed a form of exercise for your ghost. So there is no wonder in that case why yogi practices are just as effective for the psyche and mental clarity as it is for the actual body. Plasma seems to be the missing link between the two. Biophoton emissions are also recorded to happen roughly after the time of death, and thus they have been called necrotic photons, which is a death metal band name just waiting to happen. Like the opposite of the light that we see entering the womb, this flash, described as a faint spark, is seen exiting the body like it has been perspirated.
Perspiration means sweating, Sean.
So this is light, and generally light comes from heat or friction, and that is just clearly not the case here. The only option we are left with is electricity, like, you guessed it, ball lightning. It comes up again. See the previous video. I'm tired. But it emerges from nothing, just like plasma. And this should be no surprise, because lightning quite literally is plasma. Does this make lightning sentient? And is that why your local Catholic youth pastor has been hit by lightning 3 times? You know, because of what he did? No, some of these jokes don't make it after the edits. That little bit will just make the uncensored Patreon version only. Although it is really no wonder about electricity and the human body. I mean, look at the human nervous system and look at lightning. They are, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but exactly the same. Hey, as above, so below, dunk number three. Temple's book, linked in the description, also lists a whole bunch of anecdotal accounts of people seeing ectoplasm with their own eyes because of various dramatic circumstances that seem to thin the barrier between our perception and the other side. I don't want to dwell in this area because, well, stories are not evidence, but for the sake of mythological connections, I would like to read one that just gave me chills. I have seen ectoplasm on the battlefield. I have watched it emanate from a badly wounded soldier and then disappear as that soldier breathed his last. One comrade from Kentucky called it soul mist, revealing that many natives in his part of the country considered it quite a normal thing, although they seldom talked about it. He went on to tell how, after being wounded with shrapnel, another soldier lay badly wounded about 10 feet from him. Quote, I looked at him with pity, forgetting my own pain. Then, in the deepening twilight, I saw a strange smoke. It began to curl above him, as though coming from his stomach as he lay on his back moaning. Then I remembered what my friend had said about soul mist, and I watched fascinated as the ectoplasm became denser and began to flow towards me. For a moment, I thought I saw in it the face of a kindly old lady. It reached me, and for a second, I was bewildered by a strange sensation that came over me. I felt stronger. With my left arm, I raised myself and began to crawl to the dying soldier. I reached for my canteen of water. The mist was still around me, and with a sudden effort, I was on my feet. To my dying day, I shall believe the ectoplasm from the body of that dying soldier had helped me in a very mysterious way. It had given me sufficient strength to save my life. And I suppose that would be considered like a walk-in of sorts. The prana or pneuma or plasmid or ghost added its life force animation to another living body after its previous container could no longer hold it. Perhaps the electricity within is what holds onto this plasmatic consciousness. And when the lights go out, so does the ghost. But, wait a second. This brings up some concerns. Things come to mind like demonic possession and so-called summoning of spirits, which by no means will be happening in my damn house. It also brings up reincarnation. How many accounts have you heard of children who can accurately describe their former self, who just so happens to be deceased and match their every descriptive detail? I know I've read over a dozen of these impossible stories. We also know from our last video that, like our Kordalevsky clouds, plasma has an incredible ability to hold and retain information. If the plasmoids move from location to location and can store information, does that include memory? Shoot, does that include personality and characteristics? And if that is the case, how are there more people now than there were centuries ago? Can ectoplasm upgrade from plant to animal to person to planets to stars and so on, like described by Itzhak Bentov? Well, I watched a couple interviews with Robert Temple. And before I play this clip, keep in mind that Temple is not an exaggerative person. In fact, as we showed in our video, The Serious Problem, Temple does not put up with any woo-woo anything and calls out BS when he sees it. Then he goes and lets this little gem slip right here.
They must be benign, because if they didn't like us, we wouldn't still be here. They must be in favor of our continued existence, and they're probably hoping that we will make it, that the experiment will have a satisfactory result. And I do believe they send inspiration. There are, in my opinion, evil entities, plasma entities of a lesser scale, who are constantly trying to block progress, who are crazy. She called them the lizards. Now, this did not come from David Icke. Can't come down because the lizards have taken over the planet. Well, that was her word, not mine. I'll make a shocking comment here. What is this about lizards? If you realize that nothing ceases to exist that's alive, and you consider the extinction of the dinosaur bioplasma beings weren't destroyed, only their physical bodies were. In other words, there may be lots of people walking around who are reincarnations of Tyrannosaurus Rex. Mm. Well, that would explain a lot, wouldn't it? Because they're ferocious and want to bite and kill and chew and eat everybody.
Very so they're operating from that level of mentality.
Yes, yes, yes. In other words, the bioplasma beings of the dinosaurs have probably been human for millions of years, because bioplasma entities can't cease to exist, that they're still around. And this could explain the problem. They want control, you see, so they rise to the top because they devote all their energies to that, and they don't care who gets hurt.
So, as a mere entertainer here, how am I supposed to handle the fact that my ears just heard one of the most staunch scientists and no-nonsense researchers say that people be running around here haunted by dinosaur ghosts? I mean, shoot, this material writes itself. So if plasma contains information and is essentially loose non-atomic particles like charged protons and electrons, this brings up what has been called information theory. And with that, everyone's favorite physicist just entered the chat. Let's hear what David motherfucking Bohm has to say. The notion of an original energy acting to inform or put form into a much larger energy has significant applications in many areas beyond quantum theory. Consider a radio wave whose form carries a signal, the voice of an announcer, for example. The energy of the sound that is heard from the radio does not, in fact, come from this wave, but from the batteries or the power plug. This latter energy is essentially informed, but takes up its form from the information within the radio wave. This information is potentially active everywhere, but only actually active when its form enters into the electrical energy of the radio, or a wave entering a particle. This implies that an electron or any other elementary particle has a complex and subtle inner structure that is at least comparable with that of the radio. Nature may be far more subtle and strange than was previously thought. And Temple chimes in here. David Bohm's supreme mathematical imagination enabled him to suppose that large amounts of information in a simple-seeming particle might interact not only with the fields we already know about, but also with another as-yet-unknown field, another dimension, something that might even be a cosmic intelligence beneath the fields that we know about and ordering them. He called this the implicate order, and he believed and described in the language of science how the explicit order, the universe we see and experience with our senses, could unfold out of the implicate one. Lao Tzu just entered the chat. He understood this unfolding process to work like a hologram. If you break down a hologram into bits, each bit will contain an image of the entire object. This driving ordering process is equally present everywhere in the universe. It underlies our intelligence, the intelligence we see in animals and plants, and the intelligence we saw in the movements of plasma near the start of this scientific journey. So what does this all mean? If this new and ancient science is correct, that means good news and bad news. Good news is nobody ever actually dies. The bad news is, well, nobody actually dies. We gotta pause and think about that sometimes. And no doubt, it can be very frightening and even lead to some kind of existential crisis, breakdown, because you are stuck with yourself. I am stuck with myself. Is that okay with me? If my answer is no, then it is time to adjust the way my thoughts and feelings circulate. And I truly wonder if anyone can affirmatively answer yes to that question. Perhaps then, this is what the entire species is supposed to work on. And maybe this is the very thing that we are meant to figure out for ourselves on a global level. Perhaps this is why, as we said in our last video, the plasmas seem to be studying us as much as we are studying them. We are interested in its attributes and have even tried to weaponize it. But it seems to be studying something much different, our behavior. We have said many times that the judgment at the end of one's mortal life does not come from an outside seer. When we die, it is us that has to deal with the consequences of us. Perhaps this answers the age-old question that prides atheists to ask, if God is real, why does he allow so much suffering? Well, the obvious answer is usually something along the lines of, God is not a personality. He is the very beingness that allows reality to exist, the canvas that the paint goes on, followed up, of course, by the old reliable, not what the eyes can see, but that by which the eyes can see. Know that to be Brahma the Eternal. But let's pretend for a moment that he is a personage of some abstract form, and he is thus living through us to experience reality, to experience himself, of course. In that case, how selfish would it be to only experience pleasures? Well, surely no omnipotent being would leave out the other half of anything. If he wants to experience everything, he would need suffering to experience the whole, to become whole. Plasma can be individual plasmoids, but being that they are quantum particles, they are also, spooky action at a distance, entangled. Then the entire universe is such, entangled. But that means us as well. Perhaps we should stop thinking of ourselves as individual ghosts and start thinking of ourselves the way that the Kordaleski clouds see us, as one global ghost. And as we all die together, The judgment we have to face is from us.
abandoned ship. I'm not afraid of giving in. I'm heaven made amalgamates into the shade.